The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Therapy Suite. I'm Duncan Ellison, a therapeutic counsellor with a focus on positive mental health. This week, let's take a look at some of the best stories and features from the Therapy Suite in 2017 and wise words to kickstart your new year. So if good mental health matters to you, then this show is not to be missed. Join me, Duncan Ellison, as we open the doors to the Therapy Suite, only on UK Health Radio. Welcome along to the show this week. I hope you've had a restful Christmas and maybe had some time to reflect. And that's exactly what this week's show is all about. For me, I'd like to share my thanks not only to the people who have participated in the show, but also you for listening in and joining me as we raise the awareness of mental health. This year has been a year that we won't forget in a hurry. The explosion at the concert in Manchester and the fire at the block of flats in London are two events that weigh heavy on my mind. We heard last week that access to mental health services is stretched to capacity for 999 workers. You may also remember the story that 80 frontline emergency staff are still off work following their attendance at the Grenfell Tower. We remember the service personnel who are returning from deployments around the world and who are struggling to come to terms with the horrors they've witnessed. And we reflect on the news stories highlighting the amazing NHS staff here in the UK who are stretched to capacity. Whilst these news stories are negative, we are working toward a silver lining. And that is, whilst we are talking about mental health issues, we are bringing them into the mainstream. And this creates momentum. Our voices are getting louder, and people are listening, and with that, we can bring a change to our communities. It's been a positive year for the royal family. News of another child in the Cambridge household and the engagement of Prince Harry to Meghan is all good news. William, and in particular Harry, have gone a long way to normalising mental health, and that has encouraged many of us to feel more comfortable sharing our stories. Finally, I'd like to thank the team here at UK Health Radio. In September, I picked up the phone to the CEO to pitch an idea which I thought would fit within the UK Health Radio brand. And just over a month later, I was slotted into the daily schedule. Without the station, I wouldn't be able to connect with so many amazing people. And that's you. Everyday people with a story to tell. So thank you for being part of my journey. I look forward to your friendship in 2018. So this week I want to reflect on some of the stories which have stood out over the last 9 weeks. All of them have different angles and all of them feature very different people. And that is the point. Mental health doesn't discriminate. Whether you are black, white, fat, thin, rich or poor, mental health can be an influencer in your life. So the stats. They say 1 in 4 people will be suffering from a mental health problem. I'm wondering if that number is wrong. And this is not me being negative. Just think about it. We all fall in love. We all get hurt. We will all experience bereavement. We'll all be disappointed, nervous, excited, and exhausted. These are all mental health traits. It may not be depression, anxiety, bipolar, or schizophrenia, but it's still mental health. The awareness of mental health in children and young people is becoming more prevalent. And this is where I'd like to start my review. Do you remember Tabo? Tabo is a school therapy dog in Switzerland. And I found this fascinating.
Tabo is the star of this primary school. When he's here, all the children want to pet him.
When Tabo's here, the children are more careful. They make sure they don't step on him. And this way they also become more careful with each other.
The dog goes to the door when it gets too loud, as if to show he doesn't want to be in the room anymore. Then the children make each other aware of this and become quieter.
For children who don't have pets at home, it's wonderful to be able to play with a dog during the break.
Now I would like you to touch Tabo with a blindfold on. Children with behavioral problems have a different social role. They're outsiders. Tabo is totally unbiased towards them. He doesn't judge them, doesn't hold a grudge. For one moment, he lets them feel like they're the best. It's very important for them.
It's known that just by stroking an animal, our brain produces oxytocin, a stress-reducing hormone. In her studies into the relationship between humans and animals, Andrea Bates has closely observed 80 school children. They all had to do a presentation before the class. One group did it with the help of a dog they knew well. Another group could use a friend as psychological support. And a third group just got to hold a stuffed animal. Before, during, and after the presentation, children were asked to give a sample of their saliva to measure their stress levels. The group with a real dog was considerably less stressed.
When you look at the group with the dog, you see that the stress level hardly rises and even lowers significantly toward the end.
The longer the children stroked the dog before the test, the less stressed they were.
Of course, teachers can just use the dog as a reward. But what's even better is it can help children who are particularly anxious and afraid of tests. They should be allowed to stroke the dog before or during the test.
Staying with the dog theme, here in the UK there is a great organisation called Sled Dogs for Therapy, run by a chap called Shane Kennedy. Shane's a personal trainer and martial arts coach who's been working in mental health since 2007. He specialised in providing physical activity in a mental health setting. The original idea for the organisation developed after he watched an interview with a disabled military veteran with PTSD. He was given an assistance dog that turned his world around. The thing that struck Shane was when the veteran said, "It's the first thing I've been able to trust." From working and training snow dogs, Shane knows the powerful emotive reaction that these dogs have on people.
My name is Shane Kennedy, and I have an organisation called Sled Dogs of Therapy UK. I have two Alaskan Malamutes, two sled dogs, and we use them as therapy in education, in schools, and also with Help for Heroes, working with recovering service personnel. The whole idea behind therapy is really trying to advance a little bit further the relationship between dog and mankind. They don't really judge you. They don't have any ulterior motive. And they don't care what you look like. They don't care if you're rich or poor. So when the dog is looking at you, it's very honest. Sled dogs especially have a very unique effect on people. If I'm sitting down with somebody, and they are trying to tell me something very difficult, they've never told anyone before, then the dog just makes the whole experience easier. They can be looking at the dog, they can even be stroking the dog, getting that attachment, that touching. I can't do that. I can't take their hand, I can't put my arm around them, even if I wanted to. A dog can, which is very reassuring. I mean, there was one group I worked with, and the children, I was told, some of them had learning difficulties, don't speak the language very well, and they just had a blast. They're always absolutely focused, and they learn so much. Because like I said, the dogs don't care. They just love children, they love people. after I leave, they may get the children to write a thank you or draw a picture. And they always send it on. And that's worth more than money to me. It's like a little thank you note. Kiddies drawing a little picture of the dogs and me. I get a lot out of that. People ask, how can we help? And well, apart from coming to Hoover my carpet with all this dog fur, the one thing that obviously really helps us is getting the word out there about what we do. If at the very least, you know, go like us on social media. Give us a like, give us a share, spread the word. And then if you're really into what we're doing and you really think it's worthwhile, maybe consider joining, being part of Sled Dogs as Therapy UK.
It's clear the effect animals have. They provide unconditional love and support. And unconditional support is very much the approach within a client-counsellor relationship. So imagine, how would you feel if your pets, animals which you've nurtured, loved and cared for, were not able to come with you when you moved into your new home? This is exactly the position John Chadwick was faced with. John battled with a mental illness and alcohol. He was also grieving following the loss of his mother. To add to this, John was homeless and had been staying in a bed and breakfast. In a ray of light, he was offered an apartment which would have changed his life considerably. Whilst all this sounded positive, John was told his pets were not welcome in the new apartment. And this was a crushing blow. Not only was he coping with the ghosts of the past, he was now staring directly in the face of future trauma. His pets were his focus, his coping strategy for carrying on. And the thought of not being with them was life-changing. These life-changing thoughts resulted in life-ending consequences. On March the 16th, on the anniversary of his mother's death, John sent a final message to his friends. Hours later, he was found dead from a mix of prescription drugs and alcohol. Recently, I was contacted by Dee Burnett. She was John's best friend, who wanted me to share his story here on UK Health Radio. Dee has started a petition to encourage the use of pets as a support system for vulnerable people. Some people will say, how can a homeless man look after any pets? As a counsellor, being non-judgmental is key, and Dee has first-hand experience of seeing this kind of relationship, and goes on to say, I've found that the homeless take care of their pets exceptionally well, and this reason is simple. Their pet will unconditionally love them, even when they feel no one else does. Further proof of their bond is when homeless pet owners feed their pets first, even if they go hungry themselves. At an inquest in August, a coroner ruled that the death of John, who suffered from anxiety, alcoholism, and depression, was suicide. And the loss of his animals was a key factor in his decision to take his own life. His best pal Dee led the tributes after his death, saying, he was like Ace Ventura, such was his love of animals. He was an inspiration in how he battled demons from his early life. If you're wondering, John's two Jack Russell crosses, Theo and Tinkerbell, were looked after by one of his friends until they were able to be rehomed. His beloved cat Gizmo, bought for him by a gift by Dee, now lives with her daughter. But Dee is now calling for a legal entitlement for tenants deemed to be vulnerable to be able to keep pets with them and for them to be given the same status as guide dogs. She has since begun to campaign to try and prevent another such tragedy. A petition addressed to John's local MP, Helen Grant, has already gained over 7,000 signatures. In the petition, Dee says, known as a nation of animal lovers, it is becoming apparent pets are now too often seen as a liability. The introduction of service dogs have proven invaluable for those with specific health needs. Pets are also known to provide therapeutic benefits, giving people a sense of purpose to carry on. She goes on to say, let's petition change to current housing requirements to enable provision of housing with pets for those deemed as vulnerable or alone. Pets assist with the treatment of health, depression, isolation and addiction, and are invaluable companions for those who are street homeless. It's a sad story, that, but one that I hope brings comfort to people who are potentially in the same situation. Hopefully Dee's persistence will provide a silver lining in 2018. Keep your eye on my Twitter page, as I'll be posting more information about the petition and how you can help raise awareness in John's memory. You're listening to UK Health Radio with me, Duncan Ellison. Still to come on the show this week, an incredible song about positive mental health, produced by students here in the UK. I'll also be looking back at art therapy, and we'll be meeting men in Blackpool who use football as a therapeutic tool. So stay tuned. We've spoken many times on this show about the importance of positive mental health for children and young people. Whilst we live in a world where we can instantaneously connect with others, the benefits also come with downfalls. Social media can be a cruel tool, which leaves some children feeling isolated and vulnerable. A few weeks ago, I played a song written, produced and performed by students at the St. Lawrence Academy in Scunthorpe. To say it touched me is an understatement. It is an incredible song. Many of you emailed me to see if I'd play it again. Have another listen to this.
It's all about you, what you can do. Do what makes you smile. Always go that extra mile. As youth today, we need motivation. Keep calm, no panic station. So listen to this information.
I need a way out of this no man's land. Time to shout, I need a helping hand to get from where I've been to where I wanna go and never could have seen. I'd sing so low, but now it's time to shout, I need a helping hand. Can you help me please? Take my hand up, set me free. I'm not alone.
Don't be a fool, sleeping is cool. 8 hours at least, be ready for a feast. Eat a rainbow, get ready to go. Don't keep your feelings bottled up. Don't listen to the people who tell you to shut up. Express your feelings is the way to go. Even if the process is really slow.
I need a way out of this no man's land. Time to shout, we need a helping hand to get from where I've been to where I wanna go and never could have seen. I'd sing so low, but now it's time to shout, I need a helping hand. Can you help me please? Take my hand, help set me free. You are not alone.
We may be different, but that's okay. We're all unique in different ways. If you try your best, you will achieve. Cause all you have to do is believe. If you accept who you are, then in life you'll go so far.
Create the change so no.
Great stuff, I hope you'll agree. In the new year, I hope that some of the students involved in that song will share their thoughts on what mental health is really like for young people. And I'm really looking forward to that. So we move on from young people to men who have just retired. In the very first show, we heard from a team of walking footballers who shared their thoughts on mental health. Have a listen to this.
It's called walking football, but don't let that fool you. There is still passion and contact.
You make new friends, and we even meet in socially as well. We're fitter than when I first started, so it's all good. Enjoy it.
What does it mean to you personally?
Mean to me?
Yeah.
Everything. Everything. I look forward to it every day. Every day. If I wasn't playing, I'd want to know why I'd kick up a stink.
Right, go! There are now more than 600 walking football groups in the UK for men over 50. They've certainly helped with physical fitness, but this one in Blackpool was set up with money partly from a mental health charity.
Name's Les Turner, coming up for 67 years of age, and a Sunderland supporter who is very, very, very happy. Most people, when they retire, the danger time is the first 18 months to 2 years. Many, many people in that time suffer stress, depression, heart attacks. I cope with it by coming to walking football and taking my black Labrador called Shackleton for walks every day.
More than 3 million people in the UK over 60 have depression, and according to Age UK, of those, 85% receive no help from the NHS. Steve, why do you think you had a heart attack at 49?
I have to put it down to part the stress of the job. It was.
Steve Hyde used to be a primary school head teacher. He helps run the group.
When I retired at 55, I really was worried that I'd be sat there waiting for the telephone to ring. We've come out in the sun today and you immediately feel better. And I think that's the same thing, isn't it, when you meet other men and talk about similar backgrounds, and the football is the catalyst. It's been a lifesaver, really.
Men together, playing football, laughing, joking, building relationships.
Some of us have become really good friends. After each session, on a Monday and a Thursday, we go in the what we call the brew room, have a cup of tea or coffee.
Cheers.
This is just great banter. You know, a great banter.
You look forward to it?
I do look forward to it so much, yeah. I wish it was three times a week.
Research out today from the Mental Health Foundation shows men find it more difficult to maintain friendships. But if they do, they say there's a better chance of having good mental health into old age.
Another pastime which crosses over with therapy is art. We heard from Dr. Val Hewitt, who is an art therapist, and she shared her views on this creative therapy.
I actually think art is a need. It's the need we all have. Look around you when you're at meetings. How many people do you see doodling when they get bored? It's something we all do, and I wish we would stop all worrying about whether it's good art, bad art, or whatever, but just did it for the sake of it, for the enjoyment of it. An art therapist is a qualified practitioner. Usually, they are people who come from an art background, and they want to merge both their artistic experience and their care work. We work with such a wide range of clients. So we go from 3-year-old, even a little bit younger, to older people who may have conditions that are associated with old age. I believe that art therapy is a wonderful approach to enable people to address some issues that can be incredibly distressing. Because even if we're really unwell, we still have this innate need to communicate and be understood by others. It's so difficult to find the words to say it if we're upset. So I come from the background of being a migrant and a refugee, and in my family, actually doing art as a professional activity was not seen as a very positive thing to do. The worry was the wolf at the door. How are you going to survive? And it's something that I had to kind of fight for. I was not particularly interested in using art as an artist purely because I found the milieu rather sort of self-centered, and there was something in me that wanted to work with people. Art making is something we all enjoyed when we were tiny. In fact, it's a very significant element of infant development. And even if the finished product looks like a brown mess, it's still art-making. At some point, we get the message that if we're no good at art, it's not our business to do it. And that is actually very young. And it may be, at the moment, there's a lot of pressure for kids to reach targets in maths and literacy, and schools are really diminishing their creative input, and that's very sad. I do believe very strongly that we all have creativity within us, in whichever sphere we prefer. I think using any of the arts in your life, even if you have another type of work, really does make you use the right side of your brain and gives you more space to think about things differently. It certainly helps us to build resilience, and it's also lots of fun. I'm Dr. Val Hewitt, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the British Association of Art Therapists.
So maybe you got a colouring book for Christmas. Whatever you may be thinking about adult colouring, the books are on the bestseller lists around the world. Thinking back to what Dr. Val said, she comments, "I wish people would not worry about the art they have created." What she's saying is, go with the flow and enjoy yourself. It doesn't matter what the end result looks like, as long as you've enjoyed yourself. I urge you to have a look at a book called Secret Garden by Joanna Baseford. 1.4 million people bought this book, and it's amazing. Have a look at it. It's so intricate that you can't help to concentrate when colouring in. And by doing that, you are escaping from what or from whom. Well, it really doesn't matter. It's all about giving yourself some creative time out. Now, it really touches home when somebody sends a message about their experience. And it's a real privilege to be let into somebody's world. In this case, I spoke to a fella who was an inspiration. He'd been in a secure unit and recorded a very personal account of his thoughts. This chap is Sean, and this is the second part of his reflection, which at times can be uncomfortable, but it makes mental health real. This is not anecdotal, this is not acting, it's not research. This is what life with a mental health condition is all about. Sean's an inspiration in a number of ways. I think it takes real guts to be as open as he was. And when I spoke to him, he said he had an addiction which helped him manage his dark thoughts. Addiction. It's a word we hear a lot, and it isn't the most pleasant word when used in context with mental health. As a counsellor, I have to manage my thoughts in a way where I'm not being judgmental. And I must admit, I was surprised to hear what his addiction is. And to say is, rather than was, because he is still an addict. Surprisingly, his addiction is running. You heard me correctly. He ran 7 marathons in 7 days to help stay on top of his thoughts. Now that is incredible.
And it's May 2017 now. I think, I can't remember the day, but it's early May. I was released yesterday. Today's the Saturday, the 12th or 13th, I think. I was in for 3.5 days again. This time in Harlow, and I was terrified, absolutely terrified. But I had to go in because of the thoughts I'd had and the things I was doing were just terrible. I lay in the bath on the Sunday night with a kitchen knife in my hand, and I was cutting my wrists in different places, getting closer and closer to veins with the same sort of thoughts of that. I stabbed myself in the arm with a knife. And yes, it does hurt, but my thoughts weren't right. I wasn't talking. You know, other people around me knew I wasn't right. Other people were noticing my posts on Facebook or Twitter. Very angry, very emotionless. But yeah, you ignore it. You ignore the help. You push people away. It's tough. So, you know, you don't realise what's happening, but that is what it is. I think the hardest thing of all is what it does to everyone else around you. You know, you don't realise the pain, the absolute pain that you're putting your family, your children, mums and dads, your friends, even people that don't even really know you, even work colleagues, you put pressure on them and I kicked up a stink. I didn't want to go in, but I had to. It was the only bed that was available. It's nearly 60 miles away from where I live. So yeah, it was really scary. It was really scary. And it was a hard place to live and survive in. But it's reality of the disease. I needed to be safe. I needed to be in a safe place. My family couldn't keep me safe because I wasn't safe myself. But if only I would have rung some errands, rung the crisis team, used the help I had available, which is out there. People will listen to you. People will help you. But they can't do it if you don't tell them. Really what I'm trying to say is, this is hard because I suppose in a way I've brought about the end of my life probably twice now. And I only came out of hospital yesterday. And I'm still not well, and I still know I'm not well, and I still know I've got a long journey to go. But I've got a treatment team that are there for me 24/7. I've got a wife that loves me to pieces, and two children downstairs that love me to pieces as well. I need their dad, but I want to be a dad. I want to be the husband that they're proud of again. But I've got to get me right first, and that's the hardest thing of all. So I've got to work on me. Really, the moral of this story is, even if you don't know me, I mean, I'm 42 years old, I'm 6'3", I'm a big guy, but I still feel things. I still feel anger, I feel pain, I feel emotion, and depression can do some awful things to your brain because you can think that life's not worth living, and life is worth living. When you think about when I took the overdose the first time, the things that you think about are, as soon as I took it, was, what am I doing? I'm not going to see my kids grow up. I'm not going to see my, you know, I'm leaving my wife into turmoil. I'm going to leave all of these things. But when you're in that moment, you don't see it. And that's the thing that people truly don't understand. People think an easy way out. You're not. You're not taking an easy way out. You just don't know where to turn. And that is what we need to get the message out there, that there's people out there to help you. Call a friend. Reach out. Samaritans are amazing. Absolutely amazing. I've called them. I can't imagine how many times, whether it's just for a chat because I'm a little bit down or I'm feeling suicidal. There's always someone there on the end of that phone that will talk to you. Things may be bad, but people can help you get better. And I just wanted to tell my story to make people realise that fix anybody. You know, I'm lucky I've got a good job, loving family. I've got a loving mum and dad. Father-in-law, he loves me to pieces as well, and my brother, and then so many friends I couldn't tell you, you know. But when you don't love yourself, it's very hard to reach out because you think you're worthless, but you're not. I've got a massive journey still on board for me. I'm still in probably quite a dark place. It's hard, but in the way in where I am at the moment, but I'm going to work at it. I've got to work at it for my family. Can't put them through my hell, so we're going to use the help out there to get better. However long it takes, it might take years, but I've got years on my side at the moment. I'm now realising that, and you know, after being in the hospitals I've been in, you realise there's a lot of sick people out there, and it, you know, it doesn't pick on who it is. You can be a rich person, you can be a poor person, you can be a lawyer, you can be top of the league in your best field, you can be a professional footballer, you can be whatever, but it still gets you, because it doesn't matter who you are, what it is, we're all human beings. Being a human being means you have feelings. Sometimes you can't control those, and all I'm trying to say is, please, please, please talk, because both times I haven't talked, both those times, I've tried to take my life, and it's not a good place to be. It's not a good place to be at all, and I've got to learn to talk. And the reason I'm doing this is to try and tell other people to do it, and to help me to do it, because I need the help as well as everybody else. Just keep talking, that's all I'm saying. That's all this video is about, is just me telling other people probably in my shoes exactly at this moment, or have been there, in the future, get there. Hopefully they see my video and they listen and think, call. Wherever you are, call somebody, speak to somebody. It's all you need to do. I know I keep going on about it, but that is what it is. Call somebody. Yeah, there's people there to help. Don't be embarrassed. I was emotionless for months. Couldn't cry. Couldn't have any anger because there was nothing there. There was nothing in my body. Now things are coming out because I'm now feeling things again and it hurts. It does hurt to think what you do to other people with what you're doing because you're in your own bubble. Hopefully, in a few months' time, I'll do this again and I'll tell everybody, hopefully, where I'm coming out the other side and I'm improving my life and doing the right things.
Interesting things to think about there in 2018. In the autumn, the Samaritans launched a campaign urging commuters using the UK rail network to make small talk to prevent railway suicides. Commuters are urged to open a conversation with vulnerable people near the railway network. Small Talk Saves Lives aims to give the public confidence to trust their instincts and to take action if they see someone who may be at risk. In 2016, 273 people died on the UK rail network. The following advert is not a marketing concept. It's the true story of Sarah Wilson, who was 28 when she decided to take her own life. She said, "Someone talking to me and showing me they cared helped to interrupt my suicidal thoughts and gave them time to subside. The more that people understand that suicide is preventable, the better."
Attention passengers on platform 11. I'm sorry to announce that there's been a serious incident on the line.
We know that there was one individual involved. She was 28-year-old Sarah Wilson.
Sarah left a note before leaving her house because she had decided to take her own life.
But I'm very pleased to tell you, she didn't go through with it.
Because someone took the time to stop and talk to her. That was all it took to interrupt Sarah's suicidal thoughts.
I know this because I am Sarah. I'm sharing my story today to spread an important message.
That a little small talk can be all it takes to help start someone on a journey to recovery.
So if you think someone might need help, trust your instincts. Stop and have a chat. Even a question about the weather can be enough. Or tell a member of staff. You could help save a life.
Before we move on, if you have a mental health story to tell, whether it's your journey or someone close to you, or if you run a mental health project, do get in touch. Look me up on Twitter at Duncan_Ellison. Finally, in the review of 2017, one of my favourite features. It's a light-hearted look at how Disney Pixar used the five stages of grief in their film Up. So how do Disney Pixar normalise mental health in their films? Here's how. Let's take the 2009 Disney Pixar animation Up. Whilst it tugs at the heartstrings, it has a light-hearted look at life. And this film conveys the five stages of grief model. If you haven't seen it, my suggestion is do so. Very quickly, here's the plot. And I think you'll see how everything ties in together. The film starts with 9-year-old Carl, who idolises a famous explorer, and befriends a girl called Ellie, who shares a common interest in exploration. Carl and Ellie grow up together and get married. Sadly, Ellie suffers from a miscarriage and the couple are told they will never have children. So they focus their time and money saving for an exciting trip away, something they've always dreamed about. But when Carl arranges the trip, Ellie sadly passes away. Years pass and Carl still lives in the same home he and Ellie shared, but the neighbourhood is being demolished to make way for skyscrapers. When he accidentally injures a construction worker, the court deems him a public menace and orders him to move into a retirement home. However, Carl keeps his promise to Ellie and turns his house into a makeshift airship using thousands of balloons. Russell is a young scout, and he visits Carl in an effort to earn his merit badge for assisting the elderly, and just as the house lifts off, he becomes an accidental stowaway. There, the adventure together begins. So let's look how the five stages of grief are illustrated in the family favourite film. Stage 1, denial. Carl refuses to accept Ellie is gone and is no longer part of his life. Living in the same house suggests he's unable to move on. He becomes recluse and is unable to make a new relationship after his wife's death. This is common for people stuck in this stage as they are unable or simply don't want to deal with their feelings. Stage 2, anger. Carl protects his house and tries to keep it in the same condition as when he and his wife were alive together. As soon as someone, and in this case the construction team, attempts to demolish the house, he lashes out and injures the construction worker. Carl does not want to move on, so resorts to anger to protect his house and his memories. Stage 3, bargaining. By exploring the world in his house come airship, he attempts to ease the pain. He believes the adventure will fill the void left by Ellie. Stage 4, depression. Instead of allowing himself to feel sad after the death of Ellie, Carl chooses anger to hide his true feelings. When his exploration does not go as planned, he feels like he has let his wife down as it was their dream to explore. He now feels he cannot maintain his promise to her. And finally, stage 5, acceptance. Throughout the film, we see a mostly withdrawn husband missing his wife. Toward the end of the film, he finds a note in his wife's scrapbook, thanking him for the adventures and the joy he has given her. There is a footnote wishing him to go on and explore the world without her. This is the moment of acceptance and the moment of change. Carl embraces the warm feelings of desire he and his wife shared and accepts that he needs to move on with new people like Russell in his life. This film offers a sweet perspective on what is, ultimately, a sad story of grief and loss. Carl, as a loving soulmate and as a bereaved husband, must continue on his journey without the one true person he loves. And that journey is symbolised in his later life adventure, which you could say is a metaphor for the five stages of grief. I hope you enjoyed that. It was certainly fun to put together. Now we're coming up to the end of the show, and indeed the end of the year. I can tell you something really exciting is happening here at UK Health Radio. It's a big secret right now, so I can't say a great deal. But when the time's right, there'll be some very exciting news to share with you. But before we head into the new year, I want to say thank you for your support once again. Without you, there would be no show. Hopefully we've shared some good times. We've probably shared some difficult moments too. But my aim is to make the content as informative and interesting as I can. And your ideas, thoughts and comments really help to shape the programme. And for 2018, we can, together, share the word that mental health is not anything to be ashamed of. Before we do close the show this week with this week's wise words, I want to let you know I have an exclusive to share with you next week. A stellar therapeutic writer is about to launch an amazing book. Part self-help, part guide to a balanced life, part personal reflection. If there is one book you have to read before the end of January, this is it. It's a great read, I can tell you, but that's all I'm saying. You'll have to tune into next week's show to find out more. Here's the final wise words of the year, and we stay with a book theme. See what you think to this. We are going to open a book. The pages are blank. We will add words on the page ourselves. The book is called Opportunity, and its first chapter is New Year's Day. Don't forget, if you do have any mental health concerns or have been affected by anything raised on today's programme, please consult your GP or find a counselling service to talk to. You've been listening to The Therapy Suite with me, Duncan Ellison, only on UK Health Radio. Stay well, keep smiling, and I wish you well for the new year ahead.